Wailing and looked down, he saw the Marines disappear into the night around the west side of the Casa Grande. He was certain the assassins would regroup and try to breach from the ground floor, so he sprinted to the staircase, ran down it, and turned into the hallway towards the west wing. He ran down the hallway, past several rooms, and then turned sharply and entered a courtyard, made of long open colonnades that formed a box around a garden of weeds with a huge garbage-strewn fountain in the middle. The open sky shone into the space and illuminated it just enough for him to see his way forward down the stone tiles. He ran towards a doorway on the far side. He cleared the room beyond with his submachine gun, found it to be an old storeroom, and also discovered a wide open door to the outside. He knew in an instant that the men were already in the house, somewhere behind him. Ramsey Cienfuegos retraced his steps. He still heard gunfire on the far end of the house, but he also knew that the men he'd seen earlier could not have made it that far in such a short time. He re-entered the courtyard, followed the east-west colonnade back to the east, and then turned to the north to go back into the hallway that led to the main portion of the Casa Grande. As he jogged, he looked away for an instant, out into the garden, wondering if someone was hiding in the tall grasses and weeds. When he looked back up, a man was there, 30 feet away, and running up the tiled colonnade towards him, a Marino in full battle dress, carrying an MP5. Both Mexicans saw each other at the same time. Both raised their weapons as their eyes widened in surprise and fear. The Marino fired his MP5 up the hall, spraying bullets towards the Federale. Ramses fired his Colt 635 down the hall, spraying bullets back at the Sicario. Ramsey Cienfuegos went down first, a hot snap into his right biceps, another to his right shoulder, and then his helmet shattered and smashed and leapt straight off his head into the air. He spun away while firing his weapon. Supersonic lead arced from the muzzle and nailed the Sicario in his right arm, then across his chest plate, tipping him backwards and knocking him down. Both fell flat on their backs on the cold tile, only 25 feet apart and bleeding in the dark colonnade hallway. Both men's primary weapons were empty, and both men sat up and struggled to reload, encumbered as they were by their wounds and the slick blood coating their weapons and their spare magazines.
"Cabron!"
Ramsey shouted as he rolled onto his right hip, ejected the spent magazine from the well of the rifle, used the same arm to retrieve a loaded spare from his assault vest, and struggled to reload.
"Chingado Federale!"
the Marine shouted as a reply. His voice echoed in the hallway and across the courtyard. He'd given up on reloading his rifle. Instead, he pushed the weapon away, reached across his body with his left hand, and, with a shout of pain, drew his pistol from the drop-leg holster on his right hip. He fought his inertia to roll back to his left to line up a shot. Ramses gritted his teeth against the searing burn of the bullet wounds, screamed another obscenity at the assassin, and realized he was beaten. He struggled to pull back the charging handle on the rifle with his one good hand. He looked up to see the black pistol emerge at the end of the Sicario's arm, saw the assassin scoot on the tile in his expanding blood pool to get his weapon around for the killing shot. Ramses knew he could not ready his weapon before his enemy could raise his. He could not pull back the charging handle one-handed without propping the butt of the gun on the tile, and he had no time to do this. He wore no handgun. He'd given it to Major Gamboa's sister, and without a loaded rifle, he had no way to engage his foe. So he let the rifle fall to the floor, sat there on the cold tile, his legs splayed out in front of him, and he relaxed, thought of his family, and waited to die. The Marine, leaning on his side ahead of him, grimaced in pain as his weapon rose. He clearly saw he would get the drop on the Federale, and his face, contorted in pain, morphed into a smile. Ramses Cienfuegos drew a long breath inside, watched his killer enjoy the moment.
Come mierda!
Eat shit, Ramsey shouted. And then, as silent and as fast as the pre-dawn breeze that drifted through the hacienda, the American sprinted from around the corner and into the tile colonnade behind the Marine. He carried the long, old side-by-side double-barrel shotgun, and his eyes were down at the open breech of the weapon. He was trying to reload it as he ran, but when he recognized the scene in front of him, the gringo's eyes widened. Ramses watched the gringo discard the two fresh shotgun shells back over his shoulder, and then the wounded Mexican Federale watched the American toss the big shotgun into the air in front of him while he ran forward as fast as he could. The Marine assassin knew nothing of the danger behind him. He took his time to level his Sig Sauer pistol at the injured man sitting ahead of him on the tile. The wooden-stocked scattergun spun through the air backwards. The gringo caught it with both hands around the barrel near the muzzle as he neared the unsuspecting Marine on the floor in front of him. The American took hold of the weapon by the barrel, reared back as he ran, and swung the shotgun with all his might like a baseball batter swinging for the fences, like a golfer forcing every ounce of energy behind the head of his driver, and the hickory buttstock of the shotgun connected with the back of the Sicario's head just as the Mexican began to pull the trigger on his pistol. The impact of hard wood on flesh and bone was sickening, the smack of a melon impacting the street after falling from a truck at speed. It echoed across the courtyard, and blood spatter showered the tile and stucco column just ahead of where the assassin sat. The Sicario would have died no faster had he been decapitated. He tumbled forward behind a spray that shone in the moonlight, and he fell on his face. His pistol disappeared under his body. Ramses blew a long sigh of euphoric relief as the American dropped his shotgun and ran up the hall to check on him. Just then, two more Marinos appeared behind the gringo. They made the mistake of first looking right instead of left, and Ramses saw the men before they saw their two targets. They recovered in a second, though, and began turning towards the left, began raising their rifles.
Atrás!
Behind, Ramses screamed at the American while sliding his stubby rifle hard down the tiled hallway towards him.
Cárgalo! Charge it!
He screamed. And the bearded gringo understood immediately, dove headfirst with his arms out, slid forward on his chest to reach the weapon. The cracks of rounds and the concussion of the withering gunfire of two weapons rocked the narrow hall. Stucco and stone ripped from the walls just above both men, sending sharp shards of 200-year-old building materials through the air like jet-powered hornets. Gentry grabbed the blood-smeared subgun not 10 feet in front of Ramses. He rolled onto his back while racking the bolt back on the little rifle and began firing before he'd even found his targets. As the two Sicarios' bullets stitched lower along the walls on either side of Court and Ramses, Gentry's return fire advanced on the tile floor, creating a fault-line-like fissure that chased towards the two men 40 feet on. Terracotta exploded in sparks and smoke closer and closer to the men until both Marine assassins reeled backwards, spinning and jolting from multiple gunshot wounds as they stumbled and died.
"Fuck!"
shouted Court, but he could not hear himself. His ears rang. He kept his eyes and the sights of the nearly empty Colt trained on the two forms slumped in the smoky moonlight ahead. Behind him, he heard Ramses crawling forward.
"You okay, amigo?"
asked Court without taking his eyes from the gun sights. Ramses crawled up next to Court, lay on the tile on the American's left side. Ramses spit out a mouthful of stucco and terracotta and sweat. He answered back in English that was delivered in some sort of poor impersonation.
"Yeah, dude, that was awesome."
Court just laughed. He knew the adrenaline running through him would make him edgy for about as long as his ears rang, and after that, he would crash hard. 29. Most of the surviving defenders gathered back in the living room 15 minutes later. A crowing rooster told them the dawn was near, but the sky outside remained coal black. Gentry stood, his hands on his hips, bloodstains drying on his denim jacket from his chest to the top of his pants. His beard sparkled with perspiration. He'd just returned from the driveway outside, where he'd found Eddie's brother's body lying across the front seats of the old farm truck. Wearily, he announced to the room, "Ignacio is dead."
"He died trying to rescue us,"
said Luz. "No doubt," Court replied, though he had every doubt in the world. A quick glance to Ernesto confirmed Gentry's suspicion that Ignacio's own father didn't believe his son had gone out like a hero either. But neither man spoke up. The five remaining members of the Gamboa family were huddled together on the sofa, sobbing and crying now. Ernesto seemed lost in space at this point. There were tears in his eyes, but he was not as energetic in his misery as were the rest. His wife diligently bandaged her husband's shoulder. Ernesto just kept his chin high and ignored the pain as he gazed off into the darkened corners of the room. Court continued with the bad news, and Elena translated for those who did not understand. Ramses is wounded, shot twice, but he's a tough little bastard. He'll fight if we get hit again. Ramses was in the kitchen just now, pouring clear tequila from a bottle all over his arm and shoulder. It hurt like a bitch, but it served as a decent anesthetic. The bandages that Elena had created by tearing bedsheets would help stanch the blood flow. Court next looked at Laura.
Inez is dead too. We found her in the chapel.
He paused, tried to think of something right to say.
She went quick, no pain.
Laura nodded distantly. Fatigue and shock had blunted the blow. Court noticed she did not even cry. Court continued.
There's more, I'm afraid. The truck is not going anywhere. It's riddled with bullets and smashed, and...
And?
Asked Diego. He held the M1 carbine in his hand like a security blanket. He'd fired it 20 times at the man who'd been here in this room 20 minutes prior, and although there was neither a body nor a blood trail leading away from the room, Diego felt like he'd protected his family by holding off the attacker.
And when I was outside, I heard trucks out in the distance, out past the walls of the hacienda.
Trucks?
Yes, they sounded like big armor-plated trucks.
Laura stared through her bloodshot eyes. She understood, nodded.
Federales.
Court nodded.
I'm going to assume they are not friendlies. A half dozen trucks, maybe. I'm guessing there could be 50 men out there past the wall.
Court was as shell-shocked as the rest of them. The room seemed sucked dry of all life, as if even though De La Roche's people had not yet accomplished their mission, they had already killed much of the defenders' will to survive. Court searched his brain for a silver lining, no matter how narrow the strand. Damn, he wished he was a leader. An officer, a motivator. Fuck. Just like he'd been told many times before, at this moment he felt like he was just a door kicker, a breech bitch, a gun monkey. Finally, he lightened a bit.
As for good news, there is a little. It's almost dawn, and I do not think they will hit us during the day. They know we have a bunch of new weapons at our disposal, and they can't fight us from inside their armored trucks, so we have until nightfall to find a way out of this mess. We'll come up with something.
Not exactly the speech Patton would have made at a time like this, Court realized. Laura shook her head.
Joe, you have not slept. You cannot function like...
I'll be okay.
He dismissed her with a wave of his hand. He didn't have time to talk about how he needed a nap.
I've picked over the dead Marines, and in addition to the subguns, I found radios, a set of binoculars, and a mobile phone. They've apparently already changed their radio codes. I've got to figure the mobile will be tapped or traced, and the tower around here is down. But we can hang on to it. It may come in handy at some point.
They all discussed going to the U.S. for a few minutes, and then it was everyone back to their defensive positions. Court took guard duty on the back Mirador, still the most likely avenue of any attack. He told Martin and Diego and Ramses and Laura to wander the house, keep an eye out all the windows as best they could, and the wounded and elderly Ernesto was ordered to lie down with Luz and Elena in the cellar. Laura gave her father a pistol to hold, to give him the honor of still taking a nominal role in the protection of his family. 20 minutes later, Court lay on the second floor balcony, facing east, and he watched the soft light of a clear dawn roll slowly over the forest. The white of the back wall of the property appeared slowly, as if it were being painted before his eyes on a black canvas. Although Court did not expect a daylight attack, he recognized a new danger. With the light of day came the potential for snipers in the distant hills. Anyone out on these verandas would have to remain on their hands and knees to stay below the level of the railing. The rooster continued to crow. Damn rooster. Court's veins had been filled and then sapped of adrenaline so many times in the past 24 hours. He just needed to sleep now. Now that it was time to begin a new day. He heard a noise in the distance, just on the other side of the wall, and his vision cleared with a fresh rush of adrenaline. A man's shouting. Court fixed his attention on the part of the wall where it came from.
He could just see the white band 60 yards from his position. Another shout, and just then, something dark flew through the air, over the wall, over the jacaranda vines, and it hit the long grass, bounced high and awkwardly like an oblong ball. It rolled and came to rest in lower grasses, 25 yards from the far edge of the murky swimming pool. Ramses and Martin appeared on the balcony next to Gentry. They had been floating through the house on patrol, and they had seen it too.
"What is that?" asked Martin.
Cort took the binoculars he'd pulled from a dead marine and peered through them. There was not enough light for the small optics, but he could see the roundish shape lying there in the grass.
"No sé,"
he answered. He did not know.
"A bomb?"
asked Martin.
"If it's a bomb, we're okay,"
said Cort. It was still a good distance away from the house.
"Ahead?"
asked Ramses, while picking at the bloody bandage on his arm. Everyone knew that narcos loved to chop off heads. Martin chuckled.
"Did you see it bounce?
That's not a head." Ramses chuckled too, though he winced from the pain in his wounds as he did so.
"Yeah, it's not a head."
Cort entered into the gallows humor while he scanned the length of the wall.
"Plus, we would know if we were missing any heads. We're not, are we? Should we do a head count?"
Ramses laughed and translated for Martin, who chuckled as well. Cort knew they were all near delirious from stress and exhaustion. Cort put down the optics and rubbed his eyes, sipped the last dregs of coffee that Luz had brought him earlier. A few minutes later, the light improved as the sun rose and morning glowed over the peaks of the Sierra Madres to the east. Cort took the binoculars again, squinted, cocked his head, willed the daylight to grow and show him what was there. There was no question the Sicarios wanted him to see it. They'd called out so that someone would be looking right there when the object came over the wall. Suddenly, his delirium-induced humor was gone. He had a deep sense of foreboding about this thing out there in the grass. Whatever it was, he knew only that it could not be good. Wait. A little more light shone on the left side of the object. It became clearer slowly.
It's a soccer ball.
He blew a slow sigh of relief, held some of the exhalation. Could it just be a soccer ball kicked over the wall at 6 in the morning?
Is there a note on it?
Asked Martin. Cort kept looking. He just needed a bit more light on the right-hand side. Laura appeared out on the back balcony. Cort had no idea if she recognized the threat of distant snipers, but she mimicked the three men, dropping to her hands and knees as she crawled in from the bedroom. Her hands and knees made no sound on the stone tile as she shouldered up to the American and lay down flat.
What are you looking at?
Martin explained that someone had kicked a ball over the back wall. He and Ramses and Laura speculated about this, but Cort was not involved in the conversation. His eyes were in the binoculars.
What the hell is that?
A little more light shone in the valley. He forced his eyes open wider to take in more light. Yes, that helped. It was a...
No, not that. Oh my God.
Gentry shut his eyes tightly. Now he knew. He whispered to himself in English,
What the fuck is wrong with you people?
Kay?
Asked Laura. Cort lowered his optics and looked back towards Eddie's sister. Laura, I need you to find me a large plastic bag, a towel, a water bottle, and I need your cell phone.
The phone doesn't work.
Does it have a camera?
See?
Bring it to me.
Por qué?
Just do it, he snapped at her. He was tense and angry, but then he caught himself.
Please.
She turned and crawled off the balcony. Ramses asked,
What is it? What did you see?
I'm not sure, Martin said. It's just a soccer ball, right?
Cort climbed up to his knees, took the double-barreled shotgun in his hand, and began crawling back through the door to the second floor of the house.
I wish.
5 minutes later, he was out on the patio, crouching low behind a planter full of azaleas. He used the overgrown landscaping and stayed as low to the ground as humanly possible to make his way back to the swimming pool, stopping every few feet to listen for the presence of human noises and the absence of animal noises. He heard chirping birds and even the croaking of frogs at the pool, and this relaxed him a little. He was reasonably certain he was the only person in the back garden of the hacienda, and he used this confidence to propel himself onwards.
If the Sicarios came over the wall, still 40 yards away from him, he was well aware he would be fucked. They'd be able to see him lying there in the grass. He only had a weapon that fired 2 shots without reloading, and reloading from a pocket full of shotgun shells would not be terribly efficient. He carried the gun as a last resort, but he knew the last thing he wanted to get involved with right now was a gunfight. Ramses and Martin were up on the Mirador, covering him with the MP5s taken from fallen Marines, but otherwise, he was on his own. He passed several bodies of De La Rocha's first 2 waves of killers. Court, Martin, and Ramses had already picked the